I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
The following is a production of Dirty Mo Media.
This week at Dirty Mo Media.
Winning a NASCAR Cup Series race is the hardest thing to do in all of professional team sports.
Someone asked Dale, would you give up a toe if it meant you're a NASCAR champion?
Any toe?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, pinky toe, no problem. Yeah, I'll cut it off right now.
Really?
Jeff crashed a 43 on pit road at Atlanta, but Richard Petty was so mad that he came walking up to the trailer with a piece of the car, and he said if he wants this so bad, he might as well have it.
All right, welcome into the Bojangles studio. It is time for another episode of DJD Reloaded. As you can tell from the top of the show, we got a lot to get to today. I'm your host, Carla Gebhardt, alongside
Casey Boats, your one and only host of Dorbipper Clear. Get to babysit those guys each week.
You do a good job.
Thank you.
Do you get paid extra for that?
No.
Oh.
Still working on it. And who are you?
Andrew Curlin, supervising producer of the Dale Jr. Download, host of Next Level. So, yeah.
The hardest worker here.
Yep. Man on the street.
Yes, yeah. Man on the street. Yeah, we're going to get to that in a little bit.
Yeah.
I've got a lot of job titles. Yeah, the business card. I need a few of them.
You clean the studio after this, right?
Yes, that's right. Oh. I'm going to vacuum the grass.
Yeah. Can't wait.
All right. Well, yeah, obviously we've got a lot to talk about as it concerns the Daytona 500. William Byron, your winner over the weekend. A little bit of a controversial ending. We're going to get to that. But I actually want to start with a controversial comment that was actually on your show earlier this week.
No surprise there.
Yeah, Brett had some interesting takes on NASCAR as it pertains to professional sports in general as a team sport. So let's go ahead and pull up what Brett said, and then we're going to talk about the controversy after.
Winning a NASCAR Cup Series race is the hardest thing to do in all of professional team sports. Fair?
Fair. I mean, never played. He's not arguing that. He won a couple of them.
I don't know of anything in team sports that's harder to do.
I think that's an interesting clip from Brett. Are we talking all team sports? Is it just winning a NASCAR race?
Winning one race?
Well, he said.
And we're comparing that up to just anything else in team sports.
One race. Yep.
That's what it sounds like.
Listen, it's no doubt difficult to win a cup race, but I have a hard time getting behind that statement 100%. I mean, look at, we're about to get into the NCAA basketball tournament. I mean, you've got 64 teams going for one victory. I mean, the odds of winning that are astronomical. You could maybe throw in even PGA, PGA golfers. Yes, it's individual, but they have a lot of coaches. I mean, there are so many people competing in those tournaments.
I was
going to
say, is that a team sport?
You could argue yes or no.
Yeah.
I have a hard time. I think there's so many difficult things in the sporting world. I have a hard time saying that winning a cup race is the end all be all. Maybe a championship, right, could be a different conversation.
Right.
And also, like, look at some of the wild card races, like Daytona is a wild card race. Talladega is a wild card race. I'm not saying you don't have to be talented to win those races, but sometimes luck and other circumstances can play into that. And that's why I just have a hard time subscribing to Brett's statement.
Didn't Denny say on the Netflix show, I think, where he can maybe get lucky and make a half-court shot, but
any of
those guys getting in a race car, they're not going to be able to win a race. I do see Brett's point, because
wow.
I do think that, you know, the pit crew, engineers, crew chiefs, there are so many factors that go into not only the race, but leading up to the race. I mean, it can fall on even just one missed tire or lug nut that loses a race for somebody, right?
Like, right.
I don't know. Gosh, I hate to say this, but Brett, I do agree with you.
I want to counter that point you made from Denny, though, and I don't remember the quote exactly, so we could be, you know, arguing maybe the wrong thing, but
something
like
that.
Does Denny Hamlin saying that he could jump in an NBA game and do what they do and lead a team to a champ, like, is that the statement he's making? Like, that's where I have a hard time with what he said there.
Like, you might can make one half-court shot, but you can make multiple, like Steph Curry
does.
Under
pressure, exactly.
Yeah, I think with this, it depends on your criteria. For me, obviously, I cover a lot of different sports. I like the point about the NCAA tournament because the odds of that are so slim. On one side, if your criteria is from a physicality standpoint, like, none of these drivers, pit crew members, are going to be running 100 miles an hour and hit another human being, right? There's a whole different language to football, to basketball, to really any sport that you play. From the other perspective, though, when you talk about a NASCAR team, you've got engineers, like the brains of the operation, right? Not many people are going to be able to compete with that. You've got the pit crew, you've got the spotters, you've got the drivers, all of that kind of coming into focus. And then you only have 36 races. So, like, baseball winning a World Series title is really hard, but you have a lot of opportunities at least to just win a game. You only have 36 races, so the percentage of you actually winning, but it has to be a lot smaller. So I can see from both arguments, but I think it depends on, are you talking about the physicality of a sport, or are you talking about just every move that a team can make, like to your point, could possibly ruin your chance of winning?
Well, I think also, and I feel like we talked about this a little bit earlier, but take like gymnastics.
Yeah.
And the end of the 500. I mean, gymnastics goes off of judges.
Mm-hmm. It's subjective.
NASCAR, you know, they have rules. I don't know if I agree that it's necessarily subjective, but that finish, that 500 finish,
comes down to human reaction of
right,
a button.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I could see both sides. I don't know. This is
anytime you let subjectivity into the conversation of a sport, it does cause controversy and obviously conversations like we're talking about right now.
Agreed.
And I don't mean to bash the talent or ability of these cup drivers and people who have won a race, because I know it is extremely difficult. But if the question is, hey, I challenge you to find something more difficult than winning a cup race in team sports, I feel like I could give you a few different answers.
Yeah.
That's where I struggle with Brett's
statement.
Especially,
you know, you don't necessarily have to be the most fit to get in a race car, but like my favorite sport, Supercross. So when I watch Supercross, you have to physically be fit.
But hand-eye coordination is also part of every sport too.
There's so many elements. So, I mean, bold take for Brett, but I definitely see it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Certainly some controversy out of DBC. You're not a very good babysitter, it seems like.
Okay. Well, we'll have to pull some bloopers and see how this really is.
All right, so we're going to continue this conversation now with the runner-up in the Daytona 500. Of course, that is Alex Bowman. Alex, you're joining us now after a pretty controversial conversation. We're talking about, is winning a NASCAR race the hardest thing to do in professional sports? Is it?
Oh, gosh. I've done it before, so it can't be that hard, right?
or give yourself credit.
Yeah, it's super difficult. I think there's just a lot of things that have to go right, especially at the cup level. Everybody's so good. So many teams are so good. But, man, I think any really high-level sport or competition is difficult for its own reasons. I think saying that cup racing is the most difficult thing in professional sports is maybe a little tough, right? Like, I think obviously, like, the car has to be perfect, team has to be perfect. There's a lot of parts that have to go right, but you know, I feel like every sport is kind of going to have its things that have to go right as well. So it's definitely hard, but I don't know.
You know, Alex, you're the runner-up of the Daytona 500. Obviously, there was some confusion that happened at the end of the race. What was it like from your perspective of just waiting to hear the news?
Yeah, I mean, I knew I was in front of them when the yellow light on the track came on. But I don't think that's what they go by, right? They go by the yellow light in the tower or whatever. So, to be honest, I felt like they waited a long time to throw the yellow light. And I think that's the reason that I wasn't more bummed about it than I was. It's like, to lose the Daytona 500 by 6/1000ths of a second or whatever it was is definitely heartbreaking. But they could have thrown the caution probably a bit earlier and made that margin bigger, right? So that's just part of racing. All you can do is move on to the next one and try to win the next one. So it was a good day for us. You know, got good stage points and obviously a good finish, but yeah, a little bit heartbreaking for sure.
I mean, I would say on social and media, a lot of people are thinking or saying, feel that you won the 500. Do you agree with that? Or, you know, in your head, obviously it's hard being with your teammate winning, but how would you feel about that one?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a trophy, so I don't get the same check that William's going to get. So I didn't go to New York. So I think he's the 500 winner, but yeah, I mean, it was close. Obviously I don't have access to everything NASCAR has. And, you know, I'm just happy for William. That's an interesting situation where I think teams probably would have dug into it more if it wasn't two teammates, but, at the same time, I'm sure NASCAR would have made the same call, right? Like they have whatever they make their call off of, and it was going to be what it was going to be. So, yeah, social media is interesting. They all hated me for crashing the field down the back straightaway, and then 5 minutes later, they loved me for losing the Daytona 500 by an inch. But that's how the world works these days. And yeah, I mean, I don't want to sit here and seem like I'm bitter over that by any means. I mean, it was a great day for us and a great day for the company. You know, super happy for everybody at HMS. Wish I had a trophy, but I don't, and we'll try to go get one this weekend.
So you mentioned the crash on the backstretch. Did you start it?
He's like, seems like it. I didn't. Honestly, when it happened, like I thought when Brad changed lanes that it got William more messed up than it did. You know, so halfway down the backstretch, I kind of got ping-ponged between the 99 and the 24. Like the 99 hit me as I was pushing the 24. And that's what kind of got me and the 24 pointed in different directions. And then we kind of spent the second half of the back straightaway like trying to get lined back up. And as I thought I was lined back up with them, the 6 changed lanes, and I see William kind of move a little bit, and I lifted way before I hit him, but clearly just not enough. So yeah, technically I was the guy that started it, I guess. And but one thing I will say is if it wasn't me, somebody else was gonna do it. It's Daytona 500 with a couple laps to go, right? Like that stuff happens, and hate tearing up race cars. And, you know, that's just part of speedway racing. It was a push that didn't line up perfectly and happens every time. And this time it was on me.
It was a relatively clean race up until, I guess, the crash that you started. So way to go.
Yeah. You made it more exciting.
Yeah. So.
But
thank you.
Did that
surprise? Yeah,
go ahead.
No, I just needed... I knew the fans were bored after
the
1.5 second laps we were running in stage one. So I was just trying to stir the pot a little.
Much,
you know, I like drama. So
you pretty much made Jeff Gluck's pole.
Yeah, you saved it.
Yeah. That's why they felt this was so great, right?
I guess.
Yeah, I do what I can.
Yeah. Good job.
My question was, did that surprise you how clean the race was? And I know there was some fuel saving that went into a lot of the early parts of the race. Like, did how the race play out surprise you?
Not really. Speedway racing is who can save the most fuel to have the fastest pit stop to get track position at the end. And that's all it is anymore. Like, you can't really pass the same ways that you used to be able to. You can't build runs the same ways, run stall out way faster. So track position is everything. So, you know, the fuel saving stuff, it did surprise me to run 51.50s at one point. Right. Like that's really slow.
Not great.
I was really caught off guard by that. But obviously, you know, some people thinking they could make it to the end of stage one kind of caused that whole situation. And I think the race kind of went as expected. I was surprised they got to the end of stage two clean. It got pretty dicey there for a minute, and I backed off at that point We weren't in a great spot. Like, we were maybe going to get one stage point, and I just didn't think it was worth it to tear the car up. So I backed out of it and rode around in the back for two laps, and they didn't crash. So that was surprising. Maybe it's because I wasn't in there, but it worked out for us.
So, go ahead. Now I was going to say, so now we go to Atlanta Motor Speedway, and we were talking about Jeff Gluck's poll. They also put out an anonymous article. I got to know, are you one of the drivers that wants to burn Atlanta Motor Speedway down?
Oh.
No, Atlanta's not what I picked.
Which one did you
pick? I think if you go back and look at my history at a certain racetrack, it's fairly obvious where I picked, but I'll leave it for the social media sleuths to find that one, because it's really easy. Like, there's one place that is worse than them all by a lot, and that's the one that I talk shit about.
I'm trying to think of which one this is now.
We're gonna be researching.
Yeah. Oh, it's not.
Yeah. It's not hard. We'll figure it out.
All right, Alex. Well, we appreciate you joining us, and of course, good luck at Atlanta this week, and we'll be looking for any more crashes that you can start.
Yeah, thank you guys.
I appreciate
you being here.
At this point,
yeah, hopefully I don't start any crashes this week, and we'll have a good run in our Ally 48.
It could be Brad too, so you really never know.
That's right.
The fans thank you for making it exciting.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about maybe for the next speedway race they should have like a counter above every car, and it's how many cars they've crashed at all the speedway races in the last 5 years. But I don't think they could get a long enough number for Brad. So
this could be a contingency award, right? Like, most cars wrecked.
Yeah.
Super speedways. We can work on this.
Yeah, I'm at 30 for sure. I crashed about 30 of them.
Yeah.
Pretty much everybody. All right, Alex, thank you.
All right, thanks, guys. See ya.
All right, so interestingly enough, we hang up with Alex Bowman, and we have another surprise for listeners right now. Just walks in, Dale Jr.'s here, guys.
Hey, I'm your producer. I'll go back and I'll
produce. Uh-oh.
Andrew's kicked out.
He's getting benched.
Welcome to DJD Reloaded.
Yeah.
Nice. I haven't been able to get on the show yet, so I know we're only a couple episodes in, but it's sorry to crash.
Oh, no, you crashed at the perfect time.
It was a great
time,
yeah. Absolutely.
You spoke to William on your show about winning the 500. Yes. Well, we just got off with Bowman, the runner-up finisher, to share his thoughts on what his perspective of it. And, I mean, to say the emotion of not knowing, I think it seemed like William and Alex kind of had that same vibe of having to sit there and wait for a while. And then fans are still saying that he might have won. So
yeah, you're gonna have those fans, right, that are gonna be on both sides of it. And that's the only frustrating part about our sport is we do find ourselves inevitably falling into these places where there will be debate, right? And it's no knock on NASCAR. It is just the way that the rules are stated and the cookie crumbles and all the other puns you want to use, but. Once I sat back and watched the process and understood the choices and the reasons and decisions, I was comfortable with it. Of course, you want the race to come across the line, everybody green flag, checker flag, all that. But in the end, it's got to be the toughest for Alex, right? It's the toughest situation for him, and he will probably, I talked about it on my show Tuesday. There's a couple races in my life that I just you think you can get over everything in life, right? No matter how long it takes, you eventually will come to some terms with it. But there's a couple moments in my career where I just can't accept the result, right? It's just I can't get behind the result, and it is what it. I can't change it. The statistics, the history books are written, and I think Alex will always feel that way about this race, is that he may never really accept the results personally. He doesn't have to. That's not a knock on William or the win for the 24 team, and I'm certain that he's happy about all that. Alex happy for his teammate, and it's tough. It's tough to accept the loss in that way. And but you have to.
I thought an interesting comment that Bowman said was, had it been any other team that finished second, they might would have looked a little bit further into it, because it was Hendrick Motorsports finishing 1-2. Obviously, they didn't. How much do you think another team would have gone to NASCAR in that moment?
Well, the other team, if another team had won, a competitor to HMS, they probably absolutely would have hammered the door at the NASCAR hauler or up in the booth. They would have demanded to see all of the evidence. They would have demanded, you know, to know to the very last, you know, crumble of evidence what led to that decision. And that process does not happen with Bowman winning as a teammate. I don't think that that says, you know, I think that, you know, that reaction that we may predict another team would have is consistent with how all teams react to situations like that. And when your teammate runs second, they're not going to cloud or disrupt the elation celebration. You got Rick Hendrick out in the grass next to Williams' car with the entire team and his wife and everybody. You're not going to dispute. Yep. Yeah, you don't want to do anything that sort of takes away from the moment. So Alex was in a tough situation, but I know how he is, and he handles those things well. And he's had some difficult situations in his career that are somewhat similar or prepared him for those moments. But if it was another team, they would have been, you know, regardless of the uniqueness or coolness of the moment for William Byron and how big that was for Hendrick Motorsports, the other owners would not have cared one bit. They would have went to NASCAR and said, what, prove we didn't win this race, right?
Right.
I think we won it. I mean, honestly, when I'm watching it, I'm like, Bowman won the race. I think Bowman's ahead.
Did he say that when the lights came on, he was ahead of him? I can't remember.
When he saw it.
I guess it could go off of timestamp, so it really varies.
Well, yeah, I mean, apparently when I'm watching it at home, they'll look like Bowman's ahead when the lights come on. When NASCAR shows you their evidence, you're like, okay, yeah. Their
broadcast
shows
too.
Something else.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So, I mean, who knows at this point, but really cool for William anyways.
Absolutely.
I know you have some news that just dropped earlier today.
This is a very special day at Junior Motorsports. We were able to announce earlier that Carson Quapel, who's been racing our late model stock cars for a couple years now in the Cars Tour, is going to get his opportunity to move up. He's had a chance to race in the Truck Series at Bristol last year for Spire, which was a incredible opportunity for him, and it went very well. And then, we have announced that he will race at Martinsville on April 6th, so coming up really soon.
Wow.
He's going to go race for Junior Motorsports in the Xfinity Series. So I believe this may lead to other opportunities this year in the Xfinity Series, maybe trucks, maybe ARCA, I'm not sure, but we're trying our hardest to give Carson that opportunity to get into the, you know, the upper levels to continue his progression. So very exciting. I don't know that people realize just how difficult it is to create those opportunities in this environment that we have today. And I even think that sometimes I take it for granted how difficult that is. And I told Carson, when he came to drive for us, his father, Travis, knows the industry. He knows the business. Travis Quapel's been up and down in this sport and seen it all. But I told him, I said, hey, we hung with Josh Berry for 10 years before we ever really broke through. I don't want that to be your story, but buckle up. Right, because it could be a tough, long process. But fortunately, we're starting to have some opportunities to get him into the Xfinity car, and very thankful for how all that came together. And Travis and their family, they're great people, hard workers. I'll tell you something about Carson Quapel. Carson gets up in the morning, and he goes and checks in at the late model shop and works on his late model car for us all day long, every day. He's never late, always on time, works till 5 o'clock. And then he goes home, and in his dad's shop, he works on his own cars there for his brother and his father and so forth. They have a couple of pro late models and super late models. The kid, he's 20 years old, and he's, works on race cars literally 12 hours a day, and he wants nothing else. And
you see him at Millbridge, too.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
He is I've seen him work quite hard.
I love the kid. I think he's grounded. Now he's young. He's gonna you know, when he turns 21 and you know, he's gonna find these other distractions in life, but I really do believe he understands how hard he needs to focus to stay on this path to become this race car driver he wants to be. And I think people can understand and appreciate a guy who's consistently every minute of the day got grease under his nails because he's the one having to do the work. So he's a tough little kid, great racer, and I think he's got what it takes to get to the top.
And you've been high on him for quite some time. What does it mean to you, though, in those moments where you're able to tell them about this opportunity, like to see the emotion and, like, what that means? Because you do know the hard work that he's put in to get to this point. What's the emotion of that just for you?
Well, I think for me it's for me, I'm thankful because it's hard to get those opportunities and it's hard to produce them. I'm thankful. I'm really happy for Travis. Travis and their family are sacrificing everything for their boys to have this opportunity to race and to continue to show what they can do. Both the boys have real good talent. Caden, Travis's or Carson's brother, they're both very talented and they race in the Cars Tour. But it makes you happy because that's what's in your heart. That's what's supposed to happen. They deserve the chance and they're supposed to get it. And so it makes you very relieved and happy when it happens. With Josh Berry, he was much older, much more understanding of the chance he was getting. There was a lot more emotion, I think, with Josh because he, for a long time, there were a couple years where me and Josh would have conversations and I'd say, this might not happen. Think about what you want out of your life and who you want to be and what you could achieve if the Xfinity and the Cup opportunity don't materialize, right? Start gearing your mind for that. And, you know, so when it did happen for Josh, he was like, you know, he still today can't believe where he is. I was sitting in the booth sitting in the suite at the France family suite in Daytona watching the Daytona 500, and Josh led a lap. And I was like, my gosh, you know, what a journey to lead a lap at Daytona in the biggest race at the most elite level. It was a very emotional moment that I didn't anticipate for me. But Carson's 20. He doesn't realize any of that.
Right.
He's just like, okay, what do I got to do to hit this out of the park? What do I got to do to be great when I go to Martinsville on April 6th? And be great. There's not a ton of emotion or I'm sure there's massive pressure, but he's so young. It's just like, how do I not fail? How do I do well enough to get more?
But, I mean, with having you as a mentor, I'd say he's on the right track for sure.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I got to give his daddy a lot of credit, Travis. Travis and his really raised two great boys, hard workers. They're a joy to be around. I love going to race my late model car. That experience is even better because Carson's a part of that, and I get to share. You know, I get to do that with Carson. He's so much fun to race with and be teammates with. And so, I want to say too, there's a little bit of news that I wanted to break on this show. So if Carson's going to race on April 6th in Martinsville, he's going to have to miss a Cars Tour event. He's a two-time back-to-back champion in the Cars Tour, and could, if he had a lights-out season, still win the championship this year, missing a race. But we had to find a fill-in driver for that. There's this kid named Mason Diaz. He ran second to Carson at North Wilkesboro when we brought North Wilkesboro back. That was a big night, and Mason really impressed me with his drive. I ended up running third in that race, and we were thinking about who should, you know, fill in for Carson. And run through a lot of names, but we were sitting on the grid at Florence getting ready to start the late model race, the icebreaker, a couple weeks ago, and I was parked next to Mason. We qualified side by side, and I got on the radio to our leader on the late model team, Brian, and I said, hey, looking for a driver for Hickory. I think the guy next to me can do it. And I've always thought a lot of Mason Diaz and his talent. His family owns and operates Southern National Speedway. And so when Southern National has races, which that's our opener for the Cars Tour this year, Mason works the track. Like, he's a hands-on guy, but he's also very talented as a driver. And so I'm excited that he'll get an opportunity to drive our car. He's going to try to put together some more car races this year to be able to run a full season in the Cars Tour. But opportunity, you know, for Carson also presents an opportunity for a little, you know, a driver like Mason. And so it trickles down, and hopefully everybody has a great experience over this whole process.
Yeah, what a cool moment for a couple of guys coming through the ranks. And, of course, that's what we love about this Thursday show is breaking some news just like this and having you stop by. So we appreciate you stopping by, and I guess we'll give Andrew his seat back. I guess he can come back
He's standing there anxiously. well, thank you for sharing that. We're excited to watch Carson on the Xfinity race and also Mason. That should be really cool.
Absolutely. Thank you all. Thanks for letting me come in, Crash.
Hey, anytime.
Anytime.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
All right, so totally unplanned that he stops by, but what a cool moment for him to share that news. And, of course, that leads us right into some Dale call-ins. We had fans.
Perfect.
I mean, again, totally unplanned, but a pretty cool way for us to get to these calls. So let's go ahead and hear from the first caller. Want to do that?
Let's do it.
Perfect.
DJD, I'm calling again. I made it on the show last week, but I'm calling about my reaction about the 500. Pretty eventful. 500. Congratulations to William Byron and Hendrick Motorsports on getting their first championship, or not first championship, but first Daytona 500 win since Dale Jr. did it in 2014. I thought that was pretty cool. But reaction was, man, I thought there at the end of the race there was a lot of blocking that didn't need to be done and causing a scrap yard because of it. But all in all, it was a good race, and hope to make the show. Thanks.
Certainly a lot of blocking, yes. I don't necessarily think it was unnecessary, though.
It was definitely not unnecessary. It's the Daytona 500.
That's what I'm thinking.
Like, at the end of every Daytona 500, I mean, we see this.
Said the same thing. Like, last few laps, you want that trophy. I mean, they're going to do what they can.
You could totally make the argument for the beginning of the race and that whatever lap six crash it was, that being unnecessary, we're being aggressive way too early.
Right.
Sure. I made a tweet about, hey, are we being too aggressive the early stage of the Daytona 500? And someone responded when that big crash, like, are you going to tweet about this one? I'm like, no, this is completely different. They're racing for the win. It's crunch time now. But, yeah, that's my take on that call right there.
And the first part of his comment too, I do like the fact that the script, I think that's what Rick Hendrick said after the win, like the script couldn't have been written any better for them to win, you know, 10 years after Dale Jr. did this. And of course, you know, their first win of the season of their 40th anniversary. But yeah, if it comes down to the 500, you got to just put it out on the line. All right, let's go ahead and hear from the second caller now.
Just giving my thoughts on the Daytona 500. I watched the whole thing through, really excited for it, even though it was Monday race. And towards the end of the race, you know, there's going to be a big wreck, but really what I was thinking about was how the yellow came out and ended the race, and it just kind of let the air out of my tank, you know. Really wanted to see him race back to the flag, but I know it's NASCAR's decision, but really would have liked to see a side-by-side finish or something like that.
I feel like he's very emotional.
Yeah, it happens.
Listen, it's all right. We didn't get to see the green flag finish this year.
I feel like that's how Bowman should be.
Yeah, that is. Did Bowman call back? I think Alex Bowman just called back and told us really how he felt.
I like feel bad for him. Like he was very emotional about this.
Listen, don't worry. Yeah, don't worry. Next week is probably going to race just as exciting.
Speedway race. That could very well end just like he did.
But
we can't have him upset 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah, so maybe call back in a little bit of a better mood.
But he's also not the only person that feels this way, right?
Yeah.
Like, we understand.
No, yeah. Listen.
Totally feel you.
I think everyone wanted to see it race back to the green. It was just an unfortunate situation that we decided to crash, come into the white. We take the white. You know, caution comes out. I did want to see, you know, and again, this goes back to Alex Bowman. I did want to see that race play out without the big one. You know, how many times do we get to see a full pit strategy finish to a Daytona 500? We were gearing up for that.
Green, white, checkered type of vibe.
No, like I'm saying, race that thing 20, 30 laps right to the checkered flag, all green. Okay, that's kind of how it was playing out.
It was good
to
racing at the end. I was, that
I was
makes
excited
sense.
To see how that was going to finish.
All right, let's hear from our third and final caller today.
Hey, DJ D crew, I wanted to get my perspective on the Daytona 500 because it's one I'm never going to forget, and I'll tell you why. My name is Anthony. I live in Oregon, and the first Daytona 500 that was ran in my lifetime was in 1997. And Jeff Gordon won that race in that number 24 car. And for whatever reason, I became a lifelong fan of the number 24 car. Well, fast forward to 2023, and my son is born, and I'm super stoked to finally have somebody to sit down and watch races with me. And of course, we did that throughout the season last year, but this was the first Daytona 500 ran in his lifetime. Huh. And when you know it, that number 24 car won again. So in both of our first Daytona 500s, whether we have a first-hand recollection of it or not, the number 24 car won, and that's something that I get to share with my son forever. And I just want to say thanks to William Byron for unknowingly giving me that lifelong memory that I'm going to tell every race fan that I come across until I die. And I want to thank you guys for giving me the platform to share it. So hope everybody's doing good over there, and have a good rest of the day. Bye.
We're getting emotional after the Daytona 500, but I do love this, right? Like, this is why you like
this
racing and storylines.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
And having the platform to share it, like, this is what the purpose of DJD Reloaded. So
this kid's name better be William. Right?
I don't know about that.
Byron could make a first name.
Man, it was almost perfect. It's his first, the caller's first 500, 24-1, his son's first 500, the 24-1 in 24, but he was born in 2023. Mm. So close.
So close.
But hey, that's still a really cool story.
Also, we're moms. Yeah. We know it's going to be a while till this boy is
He's
able to watch
remember
a full
it.
And really
race.
Understand. Yeah. Yep.
All right. Well, Andrew, I ran into you in Daytona.
That's right.
In the garages. You
Very
were,
briefly.
Briefly, because you had to, like, you were on a mission. You had to go ask a lot of questions to a lot of drivers and fans. I'm glad it was you and not me, because I don't like to talk to people about, like, their feet and toes. It's just kind of a weird platform
for people on
TV. I wouldn't
say I like to talk about it either.
You
it's
sure
not like,
seem to enjoy it.
It was a topic of conversation for you, though. I mean,
it was.
Should we hear the responses from those?
Yes. So, like, you know, to tee it up, on the download last week, we were looking at Dale's old tweets, and someone asked him, would you give up a toe if it meant you won a championship? And Dale said no, and I'm like, that is the wrong answer, I think. So I have to get a bigger sample size. So we went to Daytona, and I never would have expected that I'd be asking NASCAR drivers about their feet, but here we are, and I think we should hear some of the responses.
Would you give up a toe for another championship?
For another championship, I feel like I'm confident enough in my team we can win them with 10 toes, so I'll keep my toes and work a little harder trying to get one.
Now, you have a championship. You have all 10 toes still, though, right?
I do have all 10 toes. I have all fingers and toes so far.
That is great.
Which toe?
Dealer's choice.
Any toe?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Pinky toe, no problem.
That's the right answer, I think.
Yeah, I'm not cut it off right now.
Really?
You guarantee it would happen.
The care center's right over there. They probably have the tools for it.
Just whack it right off.
That's tough. I feel like I give up a pinky toe to win, like, 5 championships, but one, I don't know. That's tough. I mean, it's going to take some time to get used to walking around without your pinky toe.
Would you give up a toe if it meant you're a NASCAR champion?
No, Dale made a good point. Like, you just have a trophy, and then you also got a messed up toe.
Yeah, but it's a pretty cool trophy, man.
Yeah, but who's gonna remember?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, easy,
I pick her.
Whoa! Hey, you didn't even have to say that. That wasn't even the question.
Just being honest.
What a time.
I think Dale did change his answer, right?
Two championships and he would give up a toe.
Two.
Tyler Reddick, man, is asking for a lot. He needs five champions. Does he want it bad enough? I don't think so.
I just Martin Truex was like, absolutely, I don't need
a
toe.
Give it to
like,
me
just
right
like
now.
No question at all. Fine. I'll take
and,
it.
And like the pinky toe is actually pretty important, so that's, he should maybe reevaluate.
But I once knew a college kicker that only had four toes. Like he was born with it. So like, do you actually need? I would feel like.
I mean, maybe like cut off the middle one because then you're kind of like even on both
the ring
sides.
Toe.
Yes.
That someone, I didn't include it in this, but a fan did say yes, and I would cut off like the ring toe.
He thought about it.
Like you putting rings on your toes?
He thought about it. Both.
Yeah, he was thinking about it. I'm. Yeah, that's all I think I need to talk about feet.
I was going to say, I feel like we need to move this conversation on very quickly for listeners. Obviously, on the Dale Jr. Download, we had a guest segment. We had Ray Irvingham on this week. So cool to listen to his stories and obviously his time with Hendrick Motorsports. But we actually asked him some other questions that you didn't get to hear on Dale Jr. Download. And, of course, the first question was, what's your favorite memorabilia? And the second question was, do you have any fun stories about Mr. H when he was with Hendrick Motorsports? So let's go ahead and take a listen to what Ray had to say.
On 24 car, we kept crashing Richard Petty's cars. If the 24 car was going to wreck somebody, it was the 43. And finally, Jeff crashed the 43 on pit road at Atlanta right before the start of the 98 championship race there. Crazy. But Richard Petty was so mad that he came walking up to the trailer with a piece of the car, and he said, if he wants this so bad, he might as well have it. So I just looked at him and I said, would you sign that for me? So he looked at me like, Ray, you're an idiot. But he signed it, and I keep that right on my trophy case. Well, we did at Atlanta, we were not running well, but we had won the championship and everybody was down and we were way off. And so I said, we're gonna have some fun and break it up a little bit, make people smile, make them laugh, and enjoy the day. And I said, anybody who's not ever been over the wall for a pit stop, raise their hand. And Mr. Hendrick raised his hand. So he went over the wall and got to clean the windshield. And I think he really enjoyed himself that day.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I want to see Rick Hendrick over the wall at a race.
I want to see all the owners. Now. Can we get all the owners
and
over
owners
the wall?
Pit stop.
This needs
like
to
the pit
be.
Crew challenge, your owners have to be involved. Mm. That would be fun.
Jordan's Jack in the car.
The goat of pit stops.
You know, pit bulls fueling this thing. Yeah.
Another cool moment, too, about what he said is both of those moments actually happened at Atlanta Motor Speedway, which is pretty cool because obviously that's where the Cup Series is going this weekend. And I don't know, guys, what do you think of Atlanta and what it's got to offer? I know some of the drivers aren't necessarily too excited. Bowman didn't seem to be too upset to go there, but, you know.
I think it has turned into more of an unpredictable racetrack, obviously, since we reconfigured this thing. Is it a second week in a row where we have a wild card race? I think it's a little bit more of a controlled wild card, but I still think it's safe to say that we can call this a wild card race.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, the more wear on the track, there's a little bit more wear, obviously, than when they first repaved it. But let's go ahead and bring up what the fans thought, because we used the hashtag don't hold me to it, on who you thought or who you think is going to win Atlanta this weekend. And so can we go ahead and pull up those tweets and get to those? You've got Scott from Texas.
Blippi.
Give
me
Blippi. Austin Cindric.
That's
a translation to Austin
Cindric.
I
cannot Cindric. Look at him the same.
Is that going to stick? I kind of feel bad. I kind of feel bad for Cindric on
me.
That one.
What about Ryan? Chase Elliott is mobbed after winning at his home track for the first time in over a year. Bold.
Interesting. Our friend 00 says, Josh Berry. Kevin Harvick won when he took over for Dale Sr. at Atlanta. Josh will win taking over for Kevin. That's a bold take.
That's a very hot take.
I don't see it happening, but 00 called it if it does end up happening.
We're going to pull this back up if that does happen.
Yeah.
And I support it.
Tom Tatum got Kyle Busch. Obviously, he had a pretty strong run in Daytona. Bev Shannon, Alex Bowman is going to win. I bet Bowman
redemption
would like to hear that.
After his runner-up finish at Daytona.
That's right.
And then Justice, I apologize if I totally...
Texas far away.
Kyle Larson, which is another solid prediction.
What's interesting about Kyle Larson is, you know, our friends at Dirty Mo Doe, Tampa Tim's. I was talking with him earlier this week, and he is not so sure about Kyle Larson. It'd be worth listening to Dirty Mo Doe because... he might have some good reasons as to why to stay away from Larson this
so
week.
So that's a tease.
That's a little
you
tease.
You have to listen so you know who to bet on.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. Well, who do you think is going to win, Casey?
I think Corey LaJoy. I don't know if you remember last year, but he had a strong run. And I think he's pretty close. Even Daytona with a fourth place finish. I think he has a shot here. What about you guys?
I think we're going to be celebrating a victory on Monday at Door Bumper Clear. Give me TJ Majors and Brad Keselowski in the six car.
It'd be good to see him back in victory lane.
It would be that pick.
It's been a while.
It has been a while.
Yeah. Fun DBC because he'd probably be the most sober one compared to the other two, even if he won.
TJ,
so.
Even if he won.
Dang,
man.
Wow. Yes.
Come on.
Do you know them? They'll celebrate
for
him.
Yeah, you're right. Everyone's going to celebrate for TJ on Monday. You're right.
That's fun. All right, guys. Well, before we wrap up, of course, we've got a lot going on this week.
I want to hear your pick, though,
Carla. My pick?
Yeah.
Oh, man. I don't know. You've got me thinking. I would say Larson, but then you were just telling me that Dirty Mo Doe said don't.
Yeah, Tampa Tim said stay away.
We need to listen, see what he has to say about it.
Well, listen, Larson, you know, like I said,
it's never
it could be
a bad
a little
pick.
Bit of a wild card.
Never a bad pick.
All right, so you're leaning Kyle Larson.
All right, my pick. Here and, of course, we do have a lot going on at Dirty Mo here. And, of course, you've got the Teardown. You've got Actions Detrimental, DBC, two episodes of The Download, and Speed Street. Those are already out this week. So be sure to check those out on your podcast where you listen to those. And, of course, on YouTube, Dirty Mo Doe, like we mentioned, that's going to be out later today so you can get some advice before placing your Atlanta bets. Don't forget to call the Dale call and get your voice on the show. This is the number that you need to write down, 704-584-9703. And we're going to pick the best calls each week. Got anything else?
Well, save that phone number to your contacts. So then it's just, hey, I have a thought speed dial.
I like it.
I'm going to call this number.
All right, well, we will be back next Thursday to wrap up the action from Atlanta Motor Speedway. And, of course, listen to all of your calls, all your thoughts, all your tweets, all of those things. That'll do it for us on DJD Reloaded. We'll see you next week.
Have a great week.
Check out Dirty Mo Media on Twitter, Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram.